Tupou driving hard at the line. Tupou, has he done it? No, it's play on. They go wide. They go wide. They get the try. It's O'Connor for Queensland.
Welcome to the Rugby Fixation. We're fixated on rugby and look to talk about it as often as we can. I'm your host, Mitch Evans, although you may know me as Rev, and today we're talking Autumn Internationals kicking off properly. Before we get started, you can find us on Twitter at Rugby Fixation and get in touch as often as you like with the content put out. There's currently a comparison of age and caps for Scotland and Australia worth looking at. Anyway, let's kick things off by diving into our rugby rumblings. So for the rugby rumblings, we've got a little bit of news come out over the last little while. We won't cover too much because, you know, a lot of this will lend itself to the previews that we'll do at the end of the pod. But one of the big talking points is Owen Farrell has just got a positive COVID case. So obviously he was in line to start at 10 against Tonga this week. This obviously puts it in a great deal of jeopardy. He's all but likely to be ruled out unless they can prove there was a false positive, but even then it seems like Marcus Smith should be getting the call up at 10, which is probably what other people wanted, but is a big risk given he's just back from injury. The interesting thing with Owen Farrell, there was a bit of, I guess, controversy during the start of the week over his concerns about whether this was actually his 100th test or not. I know he's played somewhere around the low 90s for England. He's also racked up a fair few for the Lions. And they're in the process of trying to determine if the test between the Lions and the Japanese Brave Blossoms counts as a sanctioned test and whether a cap goes towards it. So he is hovering right around that 100 cap mark. So maybe this COVID scare is just another week to try and sort that, given that match was all the way back in, I think, June. On the notion of 100 tests, we've got Johnny Sexton racking up his 100th this week. So a great, accolade, I think, for a really prodigious talent over so many years of Irish rugby. He's really carried the team quite strongly in the last decade, really. And it's quite funny, too, that it's over the same sort of time frame as Beauden Barrett just getting his 100th cap. Owen Farrell's about to get his. You know, we're really seeing sort of this dynasty of 10s. And there's been a lot of talk on Twitter about who is the next best 10. Like, we've got a really clear-cut Dan Carter than Johnny Wilkinson. Who does make it into that third spot? Who's that next echelon? It seems like Beauden Barrett has, just for the stuff he's done over the years. But to be fair, we've got a really nice crop of 10s circulating world rugby. And the interesting thing is, because of, you know, they're all reaching the 100 caps, we need some new dogs to sort of take over soon. So this sort of battle emerging between Marcus Smith and Richie Mwanga and, you know, whoever else wants to put their hand up does seem really interesting. One of the other things we'll talk about, again, on the global scale, is the rugby 12s. I don't want to talk about it much because I think it's a joke. I think if you want to promote rugby or get people involved in rugby, just keep it to the way we've got it. The 15s game isn't doing that, you know, great across the world. So why would we try and detract from that? Sevens has taken off in some areas, but again, I mean, especially if you're Australian, it's not really at the peak of its powers. And between all the failed attempts to get rugby, was it Rugby X, the five-a-side version, Rugby 10s, which has had some success in Brisbane with the competitions, but really it's not that big. I just don't really see the need to try and integrate another version of this. You know, we're just getting sort of closer and closer to just rugby league. I just don't think this one really needs to go ahead, but they have set some bidding prices. So if this does inject some money into the game and get a bit of, you know, fan engagement that translates, you could chalk it up as a win. I think there's better ways to use that money and to use this sort of ingenuity. And the last bit of the rugby news, I think I couldn't go this pod without mentioning the Reds, as part of their preseason training, have been attacked by dogs intentionally. You know, the police trained dogs, so they did have supervisors there. But when you do look at the pictures, it does look like an interesting way to get team bonding and communication and all that sort of camaraderie gel together. But, you know, maybe this will work for them. Maybe that's, you know, the mongrel they need to try and get over the New Zealand sides when they have their first crack at Super Rugby Pacific. Because obviously coming in as the Super Rugby AU champions, there is a certain expectation that they can deliver somewhat. You know, they will need to tune in a better performance than what they were able to manage in the Aotearoa version of that when we went Trans-Tasman. Anyway, that's all the news I want to cover. Let's get into the round reviews. So across the week, we've seen three big games. And I know as I go through these, there'll be some matches that I might miss out, whether they be tier two status or games that, you know, I didn't particularly get any minutes or time at all to watch. So I will just cover the games that I've seen. Just because I don't really want to do a disservice to any of the others just by reading stuff that I see on Union Live. I'll start off by probably one of the biggest games of the round. I'd say the one that's talked up the most. England's Red Roses beat New Zealand's Black Ferns 43-12. And this game was sort of talked up as, you know, the two best teams in women's rugby. And 43-12, like, that is a smashing. This is the biggest scoreline that England's ever beaten New Zealand by, that any team's beaten New Zealand by in the women's game. It is a massive score. Abby Harrison and Zoe Harrison, yeah, just carved up. The impressive thing with this result is just how dominant it was at the start. I can't remember the exact score, but I think it was something around 18-0 at halftime. They really just got on the front foot and made it really hard to try and claw that back. So that is, I think, one of the impressive things with that game. The other thing, as we're looking at it, this England team was without Emily Scarrett. So that's a massive name to not have in the side as well. So I think, if anything, it just goes to show just how strong this performance was. The great thing is they've got a chance to redeem themselves this weekend. We are going to get a repeat fixture, so I'll go into that a little bit with the previews. But yeah, this game, I think, was talked up as, you know, quite a titanic clash. And England just showed that they have prepared for it. They've had the chance to play France this year in a really tight match. A few more games at the end of last year. So just maybe their preparation was just showing a little bit better in this case. But awesome fixture. And I think it's going to be another exciting one this week. In the men's side, Scotland smashed Tonga 60-14. It was an interesting game. I did kind of like the tactic of Jamie Faiva, the Tongan fullback, just to knock over points every now and then. It did keep the scoreboard ticking. But in the end, Rufus McLean and Kyle Steyn were just way too quick. I think six tries between them on the wing just really looked damaging with every run. The other, I guess, key points, they did have a few players make their debut. McLean was one of them. Sione Tuipulotu, who we probably remember from the Melbourne Rebels, he was another. But the one that stood out for me, I really liked seeing Jamie Hodgson. For me, Johnny Gray is a freak locket, you know, international level, club level for Scotland. He's been amazing. But he isn't in the frame at the moment. So Jamie Hodgson, you know, sort of had a crack out there with Rob Harley, who's 31 years old, normally plays in the back row. Another young gun, Marshall Sykes, on the bench, who probably wasn't going to get many minutes until that McLean injury, where he came on just, you know, so that they had 15 on the field. But Jamie Hodgson looks like a real talent. He's very young, but didn't miss a tackle. Did pretty well in the lineouts, given they don't have a really settled hooker at the moment. So I'm keen to see how he progresses. He's got another chance this weekend, which we'll talk about in the preview, but I really liked him. And then obviously Pierre Schoeman, the South African prop who's been plying his trade in Scotland and has earned his call-up, he did really well. I mean, a prop scoring a try on debut does help, but I think also just looked pretty solid in scrums. Probably could have got a little bit more involved with the hit-ups because he's a big body, but he put some work in. I think made 5 from 5 tackles too or something around that. The other thing they'll like is Blair Kinghorn. He's played the majority of his tests as a wing for them, just given they've got Stuart Hoggett fullback. He is probably a fullback by trade, but they gave him a crack at 10, and he's proven pretty versatile. He probably would have been close to getting a crack this week against the Wallabies, but we'll cover who is on the bench instead, because there is good reasoning for it, and the guys from Scottish Rugby Pod do a great job of discussing that, but he probably would have been close to the conversation of getting a crack, because his goal kicking wasn't amazing, but he did set up tries really well. He has a lovely pass, pretty good tactical kicking game. So I'm keen to see how he keeps improving it if he does progress as a 10-15 option for Scotland. And then the last game to review, New Zealand versus Wales, they thumped them 54-16. And I can say they because we all know that, you know, New Zealand just wiped the floor. It is embarrassing sometimes, just the form they get into. And we don't see it all the time. We saw two close games against South Africa because they could weather the storm and they knew what to do. But in some of the matches against the Wallabies this year, and obviously this game against Wales, just ran away, made it look very easy. So the counter-attacking was ridiculous. If you go through and look at the highlights, go and watch Sefi Reese's try, because that is ridiculous support play and just the work that he does to try and set that up. Will Jordan, he's just getting better and better. 16 tries in 11 games. He's someone that, you know, looks like a complete package. Whether he gets seen as a right-wing option permanently or if they want to try and shift him to fullback like he's done at the Crusaders, it looks like right wing is a really good spot for him. If anything, he's sort of taken over that George Bridge role of just being an unreal finisher, but he's a little bit bigger and it seems a little bit better in contact. So really exciting for them. And one of the things that I think probably stood out most to me was Dalton Papali'i. He looked really good at seven, and he's someone that I didn't really think was really challenging, that sort of world-class seven role. I don't think he's in the same category as, you know, a Hooper or a Watson or a Curry or, you know, a lot of these other players. But he put in a really good performance, and it got brought up a little while ago on, I think, the Pick and Go podcast, the New Zealand one sponsored by Tab. They made a good point that once you're in the New Zealand side, it's actually quite hard to get out of it. They do tend to leave you in there and just let you develop into the player that they can see. And that definitely seems to be the case with Papali'i. He's grown into that role really well. So he's not starting there this week, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's sort of getting closer and closer to featuring more often. And the good thing for him is he's so versatile that he could even be just working his way into nailing a, you know, number 20 jersey if he does end up relinquishing his grasp on the 7 jersey at the moment. We'll end the review with Player of the Week. And for me, there are a lot of players to choose from. You could nearly pick anyone in New Zealand because I just thought, you know, they sort of carved the floor. I've got to pick Rufus McLean. And a lot of people will be thinking, you know, there was another winger that scored two more tries, right? But he just looked so damaging in his runs. There was something about the manner in which he scored those tries that it just looked like he had that mix of speed, he had that power, bouncing off people like Pinball, but he was also just slicing through players and making them look stupid. Like he was unreal. So scored two tries. He only made 6 runs, but he got 101 meters, beat 6 defenders, made 3 clean breaks and no errors all the while doing that. So for me, he's my player of the week. I thought if there's one player you want to go back and watch, it's him. Very honorable mentions to Kyle Steyn on the other wing, to Will Jordan, and even go a little bit further, one of the bench players that stood out, Tupou Vaa'i for New Zealand. Another one who came on tour as a bit of a surprise last year when they were going through Australia, and you know, it really delivered. I think he's someone that, you know, could end up being quite a handy prospect for them. And I mean, the Chiefs must just be licking their lips knowing they get Brody Retallick back. Tupou Vaa'i is in great form. Josh Lord's just made his All Blacks debut. And they've still got Naitoa Arkoi in there as well. So lots to like, provided none of them jump ship and go to another franchise. Anyway, let's dive into previews and predictions. So this week, we do get a few games that really whet the appetite. Like, this is a great week for rugby. It's really, when I say Autumn Nationals kicking off, this is what I mean. The Internationals started previously outside the test window. We got a few games that we've already spoken about, but when you get this quality of games sort of back-to-back, it does feel like that sort of World Cup mode. Just makes for some great viewing. We'll start things off. The Red Roses and Black Ferns get another chance to play, as we mentioned. New Zealand have rung the changes here. So Blackwell comes in at lock. Mikaeli Tu'u comes in at 8. Brooker Was on the bench last week as a bit of utility. She's now starting at inside center. And probably two of the big changes for me is just the back line adjusting. Portia Woodman coming in at the right wing. That is a world-class athlete. You know, that is a game changer having Portia in there. Just with the experience, the try scoring prowess. So that helps massively. And to assist that, Shyelle Robbins ready comes in at fullback as well. Just pushing Renee Holmes out. So it's a really exciting side. Do I see them beating England? Probably not. Last week showed that that is a big gap to claw back, and I don't think these changes do enough of that. But I do think they definitely make it a much closer game and for that, a much better spectacle. Because, you know, England did run away with it a bit. I think this game goes down to the wire. I'm probably backing England by about 10. I still think they're quite solid. They're quite strong. Forwards look really well drilled. So that'll be the big challenge. But if New Zealand can get it, I mean, they've just got excitement out there for days. So really excited for this game. We'll leave that as a tell. I'll try and give a tip for each game. If I'm not doing that, make sure to chase me down on Twitter and let me know I'm missing out on that. Ireland versus Japan. Sexton's 100th. There's an Aussie connection in the forwards versus the New Zealand connection in the backs. For me, what I mean by that is we've obviously got Jack Cornelison, Jimmy Moore, and Ben Gunter for the Japanese side. But in that Irish back line, we're up against Bundy Aki, Jamison Gibson Park, and James Lowe. So we've got a whole heap of players that have sort of plied their trade in the Southern Hemisphere and should be a bit familiar to you know, any Aussie or Kiwi fans getting up at, what is it, midnight or so for watching this one. But for me, I'm really excited by probably two players, and that's Matsushima coming back at fullback for Japan. He has been playing in France, so he missed the game against the Wallabies, but he is a genuine freak. Whether it's on the wing or at fullback, he can just carve people up. So for me, he's probably the biggest inclusion. But I am excited to see Dylan Riley get a start on the right wing as well for Japan. I think we saw without the Lions that Ireland was still able to manage an 8-point win. I think the Irish side's looking really strong. I think the Japanese side's looking really strong. I think Ireland will close this one out. It's too big an occasion. Sexton's 100th. They've gone full strength. They're still hurting a bit from that Rugby World Cup defeat. I'll back Ireland by 13. Next game. Italy versus New Zealand. I'm going to be honest, I'm not going to watch this one live. I do tend to get up for New Zealand matches, but this one's already a foregone conclusion. I think the fact that they, you know, trounced a Wales side last week that is stronger than this Italy side, even though there's some nice, exciting players in that Italy team, for me, this is a training run. The problem I have with this, and this is an issue that, you know, I want to talk about, because obviously how people address the media is one thing, and they've got to do it for certain reasons. During the week, I can't remember which member of staff said it, but someone in the All Blacks said, we're not disrespecting Italy. You know, we still need to beat them, but it is a chance for some players to get some minutes. I have no problem with them resting players for this match. You know, the fact that Cody Taylor gets the rest so that Dane Coles comes in, great. ALB can recover, so Enel comes in, awesome. All those changes make sense to me. You know, giving Finlay Christie a chance, giving Young Tupavai and Josh Lord a chance as well, that's fine. No issue with that because, frankly, Italy are the kind of team where New Zealand can do that. They don't need to put out their best team. They're still going to smash them with a team that is definitely their second choice. But I don't like the notion of we're not disrespecting them. They are. They're definitely disrespecting them. There's no argument there. If they were playing England, would they do this? No. If they're playing South Africa, would they do this? No. Don't come out and say anything about respect, because it doesn't need to be said. Just say, you know, this is a chance for us to give some players another run, and we're going to do that. I think everyone is in agreement that New Zealand will win this match. I think everyone's in agreement that it won't be close. I think everyone's in agreement that their third string team could beat Italy. There's no debate. There's no issue with that. It's when they come out and do this sort of, you know, this false plaudit, this, you know, this trying to show some level of humility, saying, oh, we're not disrespecting them. They are, but it's fine. You know, it's fine that they're making these changes. Just don't make it seem as if it's, you know, something that isn't. So that's my issue with it. In future, for all the Kiwi coaches listening, for anyone versing a team, you know, much worse than them, we've seen it with players versing, you know, Pacific Island nations. Australia's done it and it's backfired against Samoa. You know, like, this does happen. But just leave the disrespecting comment out of it. Just say, yeah, we're using this as a chance to try some of our other squad members, and we're hoping they can do the job, because, you know, chances are they probably will. Actually, scratch the probably. They definitely will. Anyway, we follow that with England versus Tonga. There's not much of a difference here, other than Eddie Jones has named pretty much a full-strength team. And to me, it makes sense. They're versing the Wallabies next. They need to get that sort of combination set. There are a few players they are experimenting with. So, for example, the back line does get a bit of a reshuffle. Tuolangi hasn't played in a bit, so he comes in. Adam Radwan gets a first start at wing. Freddie Stewart gets a start at fullback. Actually, sorry, I shouldn't say first start for Radwan. I think he got a game against USA or Canada. But in any case, we've got some new faces in there. So that's going to be quite exciting to see. Probably for me, the biggest thing, Lapeti Tamani getting his first start for Tonga. You know, he racked up a fair few tests for the Wallabies, and he's had his time off. He's sort of made his way back through the system. And in this time where we're now talking about eligibility, I think it's great that he gets a chance to represent Tonga. You know, that's clearly a team that means quite a lot to him, and he is Tongan. So the fact that he was unable to represent Tonga despite the Wallabies no longer requiring his services did always seem like a bit of an issue. So now that he has got that chance, I hope, you know, this is just, you know, another case being caused for making this more of a regular thing, or more of an easier thing for players to transition to, whether it be after 2 or 3 years of, you know, no service for their original country, they can go and play for another nation, especially a tier two or tier three nation that they're either born in or that represents their nationality. So I think that's a great move for Lapeti Tamani. And the Tongan team does look a lot stronger than the one that played Scotland, but still, we're not really getting a close game from this. I'd expect England to get up by about 55, I think is what I tipped. So, yeah, that's going to be a big one. Probably the game of the Saturday night / Sunday morning. And I say that because Scotland versus Wallabies isn't on that night. Wales versus South Africa. To me, this is a hard one to sort of gauge. Alex Tarr of Elite Rugby Banter put up a post on Twitter and Facebook, just sort of comparing player for player. And, you know, it does come out strongly in South Africa's favor. You know, I had to agree with pretty much every decision. But there does still seem something about Wales under Gatland that could really push South Africa. And my concern is, because this is the first time Wayne Pivac's had a go at versing South Africa, I don't really know how it's going to go. Wales are massively under strength in their forwards at the moment, especially their sort of, you know, loose five. No Alan Wynne-Jones, no Justin Tipuric, no Josh Navidi, no Dan Lydiot. So much weaker side there than probably first expected. I think, I haven't checked out, they might still be without Talupe Faletau as well. So, you know, they are changes that make a bit of a difference. But then South Africa, I mean, they don't have Peter Seftatoi, they don't have Arke Snyman, they don't have Faf de Klerk, they don't have Cheslin Kolbe, Sabu Nkosi. So, you know, they're missing their fair share as well. The interesting thing will be just seeing who adapts best to the game plan. South Africa should win this, but, you know, Wales having home advantage, Wayne Pivac wanting a chance to sort of prove himself and test himself against, you know, the best team in the world, arguably. So there is a lot to like about it. For anyone wondering if I was sort of stalling a little bit, I was trying to search the Welsh team while reading that. And yeah, they don't have Faletau either. So that is a really understrength Welsh sort of back row. And obviously without Alan Wynne-Jones, it's a massive loss. For me, it's probably South Africa by about 12. I do think they've just got enough firepower. And the big thing is they got consistency. You know, this is a really solid team. I know they've made a few changes, I mean, Jesse Kriel comes in on the right wing. Herschel Yankees starts at nine. Damian Valemsa at fullback. But you know, they're not massive changes. They've been players that have been in the squad for ages. Jesse Kriel's racked up, I think, over 40 tests. Damian Valemsa, he's been in the squad and has come off the bench a lot. Herschel Yankees in a very similar position. So for me, there are a few changes, but South Africa still look just really class on paper, but very keen for this match. I think 3:30 a.m. for anyone in Queensland. So, I mean, it's probably just on the cusp of setting your alarm for. If you're in New South Wales at 4:30, definitely get up for that. You know, that's not too bad. Start your Sunday off right. France versus Argentina to close out that Sunday morning fixture, 6 a.m. for me. So that's a nice time. I'll be up to see this. We finally get to see France pretty much at full strength. They still don't have Charles Olive on the open side flanker and captain. So DuPont's taking that over. But this is a really strong side. A few people brought up that, we've got a few players that were touring Australia. Not really. We've got like four or five starters that were in Australia. There's a few on the bench. But this is a very different side to the team that toured Australia. Really importantly, the bit that everyone's talking about is the halves axis. Having Antoine Dupont, Mathieu Jalabert, Romain Ntamack, and Gael Ficou as the 9, 10, 12, and 13, that's lethal. And none of them were in Australia. None of them, you know, set foot on a plane. And these guys are like top of their positions. Like, this is a really impressive looking team. The fact that Argentina already had a pretty scrappy year does make this look like it's going to be quite challenging for them. I do like that Argentina get Thomas Gallo his first start at prop. He was the prop that scored two tries against Australia, first prop to score two tries on a debut since 1996. You know, though, it's been a long time that someone's done that. So he's very exciting. I think he's also the prop that scored some ridiculous long-range try in the URC just before. I think he plays for one of the sides in there. I'll stand corrected on that. But he's an exciting prospect. They don't have Rodrigo Bruni, who I've really liked at eight, but the fact they got a Matera, Kremer, and Facundo Issa back row, that's an exciting combination. They also get the chance to have two Carreras' start for the first time. So Santi Carreras, he gets to keep his 10 jersey, despite Nico Sanchez being on the bench. And Mateo Carreras gets a start on the left wing. So nice little opportunity for those two as a little combination. I can't remember what I tipped for this one. I think it was definitely France, but maybe by 13 or 15, it was. I think this seems pretty impressive. And I think they're a lot more settled than probably France were, you know, a decade ago. My thing is, I'm trying to get through these podcasts without using those terms that everyone associates with France, with Argentina, with South Africa. You know the buzzwords, so I'm not going to say them, but everyone has like those things that every article has to say, you know, this is the skill that they exhibit. I think we're seeing a slightly different version of France now. They still have all the skills, but they're just really sharp when they get things going. The back line excites me. The front row excites me. I've heard good things about their lock. I've not actually seen him play, but again, would you believe that I'm trying to find his name while doing this? Well, look, Union Line's been a bit glitchy, but I have heard good things about whoever they're starting at lock alongside Paul Valemsa. So let's hope that he can sort of deliver as well. Because this side has a real, real sort of dangerous edge about them. And I'm very keen to see them play. The fact that they're hosting the Export Cup does wonders for the excitement and just for getting around this team. And the last bit to talk about, Scotland versus Australia. Save the best for last. Go on all day, but the team's really good. I didn't know how they were going to shape up without Quade Cooper, without Simon Karevi. I mean, we knew who the replacements were, but I was very concerned about how the team would look. Just about, you know, would this side actually be, you know, capable of doing the damage we want it to? And with Scotland, they've just had a game against Tonga, but it was a very different sort of game. You know, like, they've made a lot of changes. Only Sam Johnson, Ali Price from the back to actually stay in the same position from last week. For the front row, it's the same, but you know, they still haven't settled on the hooker. So we've seen Ewan Ashman come in to make his debut instead of Stuart McInally, which is a big call. They've got a few interesting positions there that I think could be of interest for us. And then obviously for Australia, you know, we didn't really know what was going to happen. Reece Hodge had to leave the squad as well. So Curtly Beale came in, Colby Feinger came in, and Duncan Payal came in. You know, that's an interesting crop of players, just sort of given the dynamics there. So for me, I'll read through the Wallabies team because that's, you know, the bit we're probably most excited by. But it's interesting to see some of the decisions here because the team's looking really good on paper. And realistically, this is probably the team that a lot of us would have been close to picking if we could choose a full-strength team. You know, a few exceptions, obviously. But it looks really strong. So I'll go through it. James Slipper, Folau Fainga, and Alan Alatoba to start in the front row with Rory Arnold and Isaac Rodder on the bench. I shouldn't say that. Rory Arnold, Isaac Rodder in the locks. Rob Liotta, Michael Hooper, and Rob Valentini in the back row. Nick White, James O'Connor in the halves. Jordy Pitaia on the left wing with Hunter Paisami and Len Iketau in the centres. Tom Wright on the right wing and Andrew Kellaway, first start at fullback. Now, before I start with, you know, going through the bench players, because the bench is where it's really exciting, I've got to say, Dave Rennie has done an exceptional job of keeping the starting team as close to the same as possible week in, week out. We have used only two different starting hookers, starting loosehead props, and starting props, starting tighter props, sorry, all year. So loosehead has been between Slipper for the majority of the games, and then Bell for one. Brandon Pangramosa and Folau Fainga have split the game time pretty evenly at hooker. And then you can say the same for Alan Alatoa and Tania Latupo. This is a really, really good sign. It looks really settled. As for locks, you could make a similar case. Arnold and Rodder will become the fourth lock to start in those specific jerseys. In the four jersey, we've already had Phillips, Swain, and Rodder. Arnold now takes that one over. So, you know, it is a bit pedantic to say that it's a new, you know, person, given Rodder was in that jersey previously and he's still starting. For the number five jersey, Salakai Loto, Phillip, and Swain were in there previously, and Rodder's taking that over. It is the first game where Matt Phillip isn't in the 23. So we are getting a little bit of rotation, but even the fact that we've got that little bank of locks when, you know, previously, I think when Coleman, Arnold, Skelton, all these players went overseas, we were a bit, you know, concerned about what we'd do or what would happen. I think we've shown we've got, you know, enough depth to sort of work with here. The back row is an interesting one. And I've had some good conversations already today on Twitter from, you know, the people that have agreed, people that have disagreed. I've not been a massive Rob Liotta fan, mainly because he didn't really play much blindside flanker for the Rebels. He did sort of start as their you know, their number four lock. He was getting a bit of time there. I think one start at six, and he sort of moved there a little bit off the bench and, you know, during the game. He's got a great work rate, so I can't take that away from him. He's pretty good in the lineout. But I do think that just in terms of actual rugby playing capabilities, Harry Wilson, Pete Samu, Sean McMahon, and Issy Nasrani are better than him. And that's just personal view. You know, there'll be people out there that disagree, and Rennie's clearly one of them. I can understand Samu not starting because his bench impact has been good. Wilson isn't on tour. McMahon's gone back to Japan, and Issy Nasrani isn't in the squad either because of going overseas. So I do understand all of that and why he's starting this game, because he's probably about on par with Swinton. Yeah, but for me, I think just knowing that this isn't the ideal back row for me, it does make it, I don't know, somewhat jarring to see his name there. But, you know, he's got another chance to impress. He did very well in the Japanese game, so maybe he can carry that form over. Continuing on with the players where we've had pretty good continuity of people, Nick White starts at nine. James O'Connor 10, that's great. You know, White is our first choice scrum half. We've only used three starting scrum halves and the same three on the bench. So we've got a really clear sort of hierarchy for scrum halves at the moment. James O'Connor becomes the third fly half we've used this year. So Lolasio and Cooper split the time pretty evenly. James O'Connor would have been getting game time if not for injuries, because he was the form fly half of Super Rugby AU. Very keen to see him get a start, but it will be interesting to see how this sort of transition goes. Jordy Pataia, he gets a start on the left wing. So he has started on the right wing twice already. This time sort of taking over from Kellaway, who's taken over from Corin Betty. That left wing spot is up for grabs when Corin Betty's not there. So it's good to see Pataia come in and stake that claim. I think this will work out well, given that he's got O'Connor and Paisami around him. Because Paisami, again, he's one of the three 12s we've used this year. Ikitau, he's one of only two outside centers we've used, and it's been between him and Paisami. So we've got some lovely continuity there. And Tom Wright, he's the right wing that we started with in the original French series. So I'm keen to see him get another chance. The excitement comes from Andrew Kellaway at the back. He's the third fullback we've used this year. Banks went injured. Hodge went down injured. Kellaway gets a chance. He's done really well in his appearances off the bench. That earned him a start on the right wing. He did really well with his appearances, scoring a ridiculous amount of tries. I think he's up to 8 or something tries in his debut year. The thing will be, he's done a good job of filling in at fullback during the match if someone's gone off injured. It will be a different kettle of fish starting there, and the team knowing that he'll be there and being able to sort of plan, prepare for that. So we'll see how that goes. We'll dive into the bench, because this is just impact galore. Now, I'm going to say these names. With the exception of maybe the first name I say, everyone in here is just a battering ram in attack. This could be a massive injection if we get any sort of run. So we've got Connell McInerney, Angus Bell, Taniela Tupou, Will Skelton, Pete Samu, Tate McDermott, Kirtley Beale, Isaiah Parisi. The pause that I'm leaving in there is not a mistake. That is just for all the people sitting at home clapping. That is awesome. That's just the best injection you could have. Really excited for Will Skelton to get a chance. I don't think we saw the best of him when he was at the Wallabies. All the reports are that he's just an absolute freak, so I'm very keen to see his input there. I do hope he gets at least 25 minutes. I'd like to see a fair bit of time from him. Pete Summer, we've seen as a wrecking ball. Angus Bell and Taniela Tupou, I mean, two of the best in the business. Tate McDermott's got so many sniping runs. He's got a really exciting exchange, I think, with George Horn, who's a great aspect for the Scottish team. Kirtley Beale, good utility value, 92 test caps, that earned his 93rd. So he can come on and assist at 10, 12, 15 very handily. It'll be interesting to see how quickly he's picked up, but I mean, he's just an X-factor player anyway, so his inclusion is going to be quite handy. And then probably the player I'm most excited about, Izzy Parisi. He carved up New Zealand teams for the Waratahs, which is telling given how the rest of the team went. He was a lot of people's first choice to start at 13 at the start of the year. Injury ruled him out of that. So we do get a chance to see him now. I think it would have been nice to see him. We're probably not start, but get some time off the bench last week against Japan. Slightly different prospect. This is a hard match. There's a lot of people probably listening thinking, okay, well, Scotland are ranked, 8th or whatever they're ranked. This is a cruisy one. Let's just turn up, get the win, move on to the next. It's not going to be the case. Our last 7 encounters with Scotland, I think they've won 4 of them. A lot of them in tight fought, but the last match, they blew us out of the park. Our red card didn't help it. They were scoring some pretty basic tries even before that. So, my concern here will be, perhaps not having enough runs under the belt for our French players and Izzy Parisi, but the Wallabies team is looking very solid. You'll hear soon. I'm about to chuck on the preview I did with Cammy Black and John Anderson for the Scottish Rugby Pod. I had a really great chat with them. You know, you'll be able to tell it's an authentic listen because the Scottish accents are out, which is great. I didn't want to just have, you know, Curdy on the other end of the line just giving his best impression, given he's living over in London at the moment. I'm sure it's been atrocious. So it was great to chat to them because they've got some great insights into the Scottish team. And to be fair, they were talking up the credentials of the Scotland kicking game and, you know, so many factors in their backline that could just cause havoc. And they were quite confident of a Scotland win. So I won't harp on too long about that. I might just leave the space here for, you know, that preview to go on because I'm very keen for you to hear about how that's, you know, going because I really enjoyed my chat with them. The big takeaway here, we've got an awesome game coming up. Now that we know the teams, this is a lot more exciting than I was originally planning for, and I was already pretty excited. So let's have a listen to that. I'll see you on the other side.
Hello, everybody. This is the Scottish Rugby Podcast brought to you by the Scottish Rugby Blog. It's our bonus little OnlyFins podcast that we do during kind of internationals and autumn nations where we do a kind of short mini pod just after the team announcement. I've got John Anderson with me. Hello, John.
Hello.
And we're really lucky to be joined. We've got Mitch from the Rugby Fixation podcast in Queensland joining us as well. Hello to Mitch.
G'day, guys. Thanks very much for having me.
No, that's okay. It's good to get a kind of an Aussie perspective. As we're recording this, unfortunately, the Australian team has not been out. And we were just talking before we came on air that we're puzzled to know why, given half the Aussie team have been on Scottish time previously, that they don't understand how time difference works.
I mean, they've called in so many French players. Maybe they're trying to wait for it to work for Paris. They're just going to go to every time zone except the one that actually benefits, you know.
Yeah. So we've got the Scotland team anyway, so we will chat about that and do a bit of a preview. So we've got front row of Schumann, Turner, Ferguson. Second row is Sam Skinner, Grant Gill, Chris Backrow, Jamie Ritchie, Hamish Watson, Matt Ferguson. We've got Ali Price and Finn Russell together again. We've got Sam Johnson, Chris Harris at centre. Then you've got Doohan van der Moer back on one wing, Darcy on the other, and Stuart Hogg at fullback. Replacements, Ewan Ashman, Jamie Batty, Ollie Keble, Jamie Hodgson, Josh Bayliss, George Horn, Adam Hastings and Kyle Steyn. Is it the bench is a little bit of a surprise in places? I think the team's there or thereabouts what we were expecting.
Yeah, I think given the obvious, we're quite far down our depth chart now in terms of second rows, so given the injuries we've got there, that's still a very, very good second row to put out. And I think the rest of the team probably picked itself in a lot of ways. The bench, yeah, there's a couple of surprises on there. I had mentioned Ashman previously. So just being that guy. But yeah, Ashman, it's great to see him in there. He has been playing really well this season. So obviously he's getting his reward. I think, you know, there's... Hooker's a strange one for Scotland just now. I think there is a degree of, obviously Turner seems to have kind of usurped everyone, and Fraser Brown injured, McAnally hasn't really come back that well. So it's just, I think trying out some new options isn't bad. It's good to see Bayliss get his run as well. We'll see where he comes on. He could be quite destructive with ball in hand as well. And as you say, Cammy, you said before we started, There's potential for some cats and a rave.
Yeah, because it's the dream. So this, Mitch, this is our dream lineup here. The potential for this of having George Horn coming on at 9, Finn Russell shifting to 12, and Adam Hastings at 10. That's what we refer to as cats as a rave. We're all better off, and anything can happen at that point.
We were close. We were close against Fiji a few years ago. We had Price, Hastings, Russell, didn't we?
No, we achieved it. We achieved the full
cats. Did we get the full cats?
That Hastings try came off the back of cats at rave. It was George Horn to Russell, who then stuck. There's Horn, Hastings, Russell, and Hastings did the loop around and was put through the hole.
Magnificent. Yeah.
So we've achieved it. Mitch, how in terms of, like, obviously we Australia have had a tough time of it up until recently, and then you've got this run of 5 games where you've beaten, you know, you've beaten South Africa, and it's quite, I don't know, before this, when it was announced, I thought, oh, great, Australia again. this would be good. I felt like we were in a good place, but now I'm not so sure. So how does this feel? Can I see in the Scottish team? How does this feel to you as an Aussie?
It feels very mixed because I think the 2021 yardstick's been moved so much with obviously the three test series against France was a B/C team and getting pumped three times by New Zealand. The mood in Australia was very sort of all over the place until we beat South Africa twice and everyone's like, we're world beaters. We're back to number one. Australians are very poor losers but great winners. So as soon as we're winning, everyone's bandwagoning. So I think there's a lot of excitement, but people have been very quick to bring up, even people that I work with that aren't massive rugby fans have said, wait, last time we played Scotland, didn't they wipe the floor with us? Wasn't that like a real pants pulled down sort of moment? And look, it was. I think the excitement sort of lies in those teams are so different from 4 years ago. We haven't had a chance to play each other recently. So I think Hooper, Beale and Tupou are probably the only three in the squad that sort of survived from that game. And, you know, I don't really rate Beale much of a chance of starting, hopefully. So my concern really is just how strong the Scotland team looks with the European, with the UK-based players back in there. Because last week they demolished Tonga, which is a step down from the Wallabies, obviously. But the side was so damaging. Like seeing Rufus McLean and Kyle Stone just carve up, I thought this is going to be a real hassle for us. And then you see that neither of them can start. Stone's on the bench, but they've brought in Van der Merwe and Hogg to fill the shoes out the back. Like it's really probably the most dangerous I've seen the back line look collectively. And it's best represented by all the Lions call-ups this year. So I'm sort of shaken. I don't think the 5-game streak's really doing us that much of a favour.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, John, because I think we said that this feels like, I think we said this on the podcast this week, this feels very much like a team picked to play Australia because you've got the 5-3 split on the bench. I think we'll see a different split against South Africa next weekend. But it's the back row battle and the battle at the breakdown is going to be absolutely fascinating, especially because we've got, you know, Romain Poit, who just seems to like to ref. It's his last game. This is his last international
last
game.
Yeah.
All bets are off.
All, you know, no laws, just vibes. That's what it goes on.
That was the first message I sent my group chat was, if it's his last game, I don't have a clue how this could go. Like, we could be seeing absolute madness. We could see the strictest game he's ever done. Like, anything could happen.
Yeah.
But I think just your two mentions there, the back row battle, like Hamish Watson versus Michael Hooper, this is probably two of the most informed sevens in the world. Obviously, Six Nations player of the tournament. Most Aussie fans, but even a lot of South Africans and Kiwis, I've seen trumpeting Hooper for World Player of the Year. There's so much like to like about this matchup. I know the sevens don't, you know, tend to just see each other that often, but just seeing two players are probably at the peak of their powers right now is awesome. And the other thing I just want to throw out, Ewan Ashman, I didn't know much about him going into this and getting a debut. I thought maybe he wouldn't get that against South Africa, but I think you're right. Like, this is a game against Wallabies. We don't have a settled hooker or backup hooker. This is probably a pretty good game to, you know, test that, you know, our lineout's not super damaging. We've got a pretty good scrum at the moment, but, you know, this is a pretty good game to make your debut against, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The hooker thing is interesting, John, because the lineup wasn't brilliant against Tonga.
No.
And you know, so, I mean, it's not, you know, I think that, you know, Turner did a good job. And I think you've got, obviously, got Gilchrist back in, and Sam Skinner does a lot of lineup calling and stuff. So I don't know. That's going to be interesting, I think, if Australia, as Mitch says, haven't got a settled hooker and Scotland's lineout's a work in progress, it seems.
Do you know what? I think, like, I've obviously given Grant Gilchrist what for on this podcast so many times, right? But to be fair to him, he is a world-class line-out operator. So Turner's darts tend to be a bit ropey. You know, we see it at Glasgow as well. He can be a little bit wayward, but there's other times he turns up and he'll nail every throw and he's inconsistent. So if he has one of his good days, with Gilchrist kind of probably calling the line out, I would imagine, I think we'll be okay. We've got that kind of degree of flexibility in the back row as well. So we've got, obviously, Jamie Ritchie's in there. He can act as a line-out option as well. So there's options there. And I think, yeah, the team's been picked with, it feels a bit like, let's not worry too much about line-outs and scrums and that. Let's just run really, really fast and hard at people. And I like that tactic.
Yeah, I think it's an exciting lineup, and I think that's it's you can see it's a lineup that's kind of lineup that's there to play rugby,
yeah,
as opposed to grind things out. So it's going to be a really interesting game. I think staying on the bench, John, I think we said on the podcast that's a fairly obvious choice when you've got this split because he can cover centre as well.
Yeah, so we were talking about it.
I think Kinghorn was never going to make it. I don't think if we're going with this split.
No, and that's not because we're Kinghorn truthers. It's not because we're haters. It's because he's been picked. Kyle Steyn's been picked because he covers 13. Russell covers 12. Harris covers 12. Steyn cover the wing as well. Hastings 10 in fullback. There's your back. Backs all covered. That's why he's there. Kinghorn can cover wing 15, 10. You know, I bet you could run him in the centre, and that would be quite fun. But I don't know how good it would be.
It's a hell of a turnaround for Finn Russell. Now, you know, because we've got two vice captains and a captain again, this will be interesting for Roman Platt, whether he makes Stuart, whether he's happy to speak to vice captains or he's going to make Stuart Hogg run the length of the pitch every time he needs to talk to the captain.
Hoggy covers 27 kilometres in the first half.
Yeah. But it is a hell of a turnaround for Finn Russell because I think it was, you know, Ian had put on his Facebook memories about the fact that, you know, it was only 2 years ago, in fact, almost to the day, that Finn Russell was kicked out of camp for, you know, drinking one too many beers, allegedly. And now here he is back. I think that says something about Gregor Townsend, John, that he's not a stubborn coach. Like other, I can't think of another international coach that would be open to burying the hatchet and moving on. Yeah. Well, that would be it for any other player with that kind of breach. And given what happened in the press afterwards, that should have been it.
Well, that was the point I was going to make, actually, Cam. The press afterwards, it got ugly. Like, both sides were taking swipes at each other. It was ugly. And, you know, there probably was a question whether he could return. But it does. It says a lot. And I think we've seen a lot from Townsend over the years that he does have... You know, he had the incident with Stuart Hogg at Glasgow as well, where Stuart had some people over in Ulster were batting their eyelids at him and saying, come hither, young Stuart. Gregor dropped him and said, no, do you know what? No, son, you can sit out the final, you can sit out this. And but they buried the hatchet and they got the job done. And, you know, he's obviously his captain for Scotland now. So clearly, you know, as you say, Townsend... He must forgive. This is revolutionary. Like, I wonder if it's something Pep Guardiola does, because obviously Townsend's talked a lot about following the Pep philosophy.
Yeah, well, Pep's great philosophy is FIFO.
FIFO.
Where you fit in or you F off.
Yes, right, yes.
That's Pep's philosophy. And I think, I guess that to a certain extent, Hogg certainly showed a lot of contrition when he came back into the Glasgow side. And I think him and Russell have come to an understanding. I don't think there's been any contrition necessarily on either side, but I think they maybe understand each other better and were willing to move on. Speaking of moving on, though, Mitch, we've got Dave Rennie coming back. And now Dave Rennie left Scotland under a bit of a cloud because... This, on paper, I think he did very well at Glasgow. He reached the pro, was it 14 at the time, John?
14 at the time, yeah.
Reached the final, he made the playoffs. But there was a lot, after he left, there was a lot of disquiet from a number of ex-players. On the flip side, is that there's a number of ex-players that really, really liked Dave Rennie and really liked what he did. But Glasgow never really kind of, I don't know, there's a feeling that they never kicked on under him. He didn't do much to develop kind of players. But I don't know, I don't know whether it's just the international rugby suits him better, but there seems to be a lot of kind of positive noise coming out of the Australian squad about what he's done after a bit of a shaky start.
Yeah, the big thing seems to be around culture, and everyone's really positive about how he's just unified everyone. And I mean, Australia is naturally a bit of a cultural melting pot. Like, we've got a lot of Pacific Islanders in the team naturally, and then also trying to get the Indigenous Australians represented in there as well. And I think having his own Cook Island heritage, he's, you know, tried to embrace everyone in there. Everyone seems to have bought into it, which is good. But you're right about the Glasgow, because I was trying to keep up with some of the games, especially when I heard he was coming to the Wallabies. And, you know, with the squad that he had and with some of the players there, I thought he started pretty strong and then probably didn't get to the peaks he had with the Chiefs in New Zealand. And part of me does wonder if he does need some of that sort of Polynesian or that, you know, the Southern Hemisphere sort of vibe, where there's just a difference in the players and how they sort of have grown up playing. I think a lot of the similarities he'd find in Waikato with the Chiefs, you'd probably find a lot in definitely parts of Queensland and New South Wales. So whether it's just the playing style, I think I've loved him for the Wallabies. He seems to have got everyone to buy in, and that's a great thing. But you're right, I was a little shocked that he didn't get Glasgow to actually win the title, you know, to get them to that sort of next step consistently, I think.
And how are you finding Matt Taylor? Because, again, he kind of felt like he ran out of steam a little bit with the Scotland, that, you know, he'd started off, the defence was quite solid, but over time our defence just seemed to get weaker and weaker, and, you know, Steve Tandy's coming in and really tightened things up. So has he found a kind of a new lease of life in Australia with the Australian defence, or is it still an issue?
I think it's ebbed and flowed. And the problem is, I think we've played New Zealand 7 times, you know, in Rennie's 17-game tenure. So, you know, that makes up such a large chunk. That first game when it was 16-all, I thought, oh, my God, we're going to be able to do it. This is great. You know, we can match it with them. And then this year we've seen so many blowouts, and they do tend to do that. Our counter-attacking game's just so good. And what I'll say for Matt Taylor, he's done a great job of getting players to nail their one-on-one tackling and their cover defense. So that's been a really strong point. I think we've seen a lot of times where certain breaks have been made in previous years that just would have been a try. We've actually counterbacked pretty well, given away a few more penalties in the process, but I think it's actually led to a lot less tries conceded. The challenge will be, I think, traditionally the Wallabies have been pretty easy to read and analyze, especially under the Checker era. It was very, I think, easy for teams to look at us and say, okay, well, this is how we can pick them apart. My concern is that obviously happened with Matt Taylor in Scotland, and I'm concerned that's going to start happening quite soon. The majority of our wins have been done sort of in a similar way. We don't blow teams away by much. We sort of have to stay in it. It's a bit of a fight. Very clearly against Japan, we had this really weird tactic of not ever going for long passes, just trying to play blindside and really short passes. Good teams will pick us off if we try and do that again. And I don't think, you know, we were in a position to try and hide our best hand. So I think, yeah, my big concern is with that defensive side of things, our attack's improved a lot. Our one-on-one defense has improved a lot. I don't know how well we'll do against these Northern Hemisphere teams. And this Scottish team will know a lot of how we're going to play.
Yeah, and I suppose that's it, John, because I suppose the worry for Scotland is you've got a coaching setup in Australia that knows a lot about how probably all the players operate, given they're familiar with the Scotland setup in Glasgow. But that works two ways. And I suppose the unknown quantity is that we coaching-wise, we've got more unknowns to Australia than the other way around. That you know, I don't think any of them, anybody who's there worked with Steve Tandy, for example.
No, absolutely. I think the way it was interesting, the Matt Taylor thing, when Tandy came in, the difference in the Scottish defence, the structure just seemed to change overnight, and it was like really heartening. But yeah, I totally agree. I think we're probably in a slightly better position. And Rennie's been away from Scotland for a couple of years now. Jeez, time flies, doesn't it? Eh? Just realizing it's 2 years later. And in that time, you know, we've had, yeah, the core of the side, the core of the Scottish side is probably similar in that, you know, your kind of headline players are still the same, but there's new blood there. And Dave Rennie certainly will do his best to kind of create a structure that mitigates that. My concern would be, scrummaging wise, it's going to be a right ding dong. Xander Fagerson came on leaps and bounds under the tutelage of Petrus Duplessis, so it'll be interesting to see if Petrus is passing on some of the wisdom to the Australian props on how to best big sandbags.
Yeah, well, I know that Xander Fagerson took a lot of Petrus's things to the Lions thing because he had all those weird
the bands and the stretchy neck things.
Yeah, stuff that makes it look like you should find it in somebody's basement somewhere. or in a club where you have to do a secret knock to go into. But yeah, he certainly bought into that. Like you said, that'll be interesting to see how weaknesses are exploited. Mitch, what's your feeling then? I mean, I know it's hard with, we've not got the, you know, we've not got the Wallaby squad to look at, but Kenny, how do you see things panning out? What's your prediction for scoreline?
Scoreline at the moment, I think it's going to be 5 points either side. I know other than the blowout at the end of 2017, I think the last six or seven games have been really, really tight, you know, within that sort of one try scored. I think the concern for me is that the Wallabies are playing their first game without either Quaid or Simon Karevi. So they're both definitely gone, which does make a big difference. O'Connor was in great form for Super Rugby, but he's had so many injuries. And the concern for me is probably just two areas. The back row, I'm not a massive Rob Leota fan. So if he starts at six, I don't think he's anywhere near the caliber of Jamie Ritchie. Lockie Swinton's marginally better. But again, I think it's a real prime opportunity, especially for, you know, two young number eights. Matt Fagerson versus Rob Valentini is nearly worth price of admission. You know, they're like, that's a great clash. So I think for me, if we can shore up set piece, I do think we've probably got the better front row and locks depending on who we play. That's probably the one area I'm a little bit more confident. But the Scottish outside backs, that's lethal. And without Simon Karevi, we're looking at a centre combination probably of Plasami and Ikitau, both 23, both under or about 10 caps. You know, against Johnson and Chris Harris, that's a massive ask. So I think if the Wallabies get line out, scrum ascendancy, we probably get up by five. If Scotland get even parity, they get up. So that would be my my issue. I'll say Wallabies by four because I'm going to be optimistic. But let's just say that the sports bet account would definitely be going Scotland. So I'm happy either way.
Yeah. John, what's your feeling about the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a sensible analysis. I personally think set piece is not going to be, I don't think it's going to be an issue, actually. I think both teams are out to play and both teams will run the ball at each other with every opportunity. I think if that happens, Scotland's kicking game, particularly the 50-22 variation, I think both Hogg and Russell have shown an aptitude to that law. So there could be some interesting kicking battles, but I think, you know, I think the Scottish back row is too good with Ritchie being the kind of kingmaker there. I think he changes the whole dynamic of the Scottish back row, and because he was originally a seven, he played seven and he's kind of come to six, so you've almost got that two fetcher approach, which we stole from you guys all those years ago.
The Pooper model lives on. Yeah.
We went a step further and went with three sevens at one point. So.
That was in that game.
That game, yeah.
That game, semi-final, yeah.
Shall not be quarter-final. Should have been a semi-final. I think the Scottish back row will get Scotland some front football. I think Russell could tear up any team on the planet just now. And as you say, that back three is absolutely lethal. And the good thing from a Scottish perspective is the bench, it doesn't drop the intensity at all. George Horn and Adam Hastings are not going to play any slower, let's be honest. So I think Scotland could, if they get out in front, I think Scotland could actually cause a pretty big dent in Australia, and it could be 10 points.
I think the exciting thing is the possibility of Qatar rave, John. We talked about this before we came on air. That, you know,
that's all we care about. That's all we want
out the game is Horn at 9, Hastings at 10, Russell at 12. That's all we want.
All we need.
Yeah. I felt fairly confident, and then I watched Squidge's video looking at how Australia have gone five in a row, and then I felt less confident watching kind of the way Australia had gone, because I think the last Australia game I watched was the All Blacks game in Perth where they played on the Aussie rules.
Oval pitch.
And I was thinking, I'm happy the way things are going for the autumn. And then I watched Squidge's video of what's happened since then, because I had an awful lot of chance to watch Australia. And I kind of feel it's a shame that Australia aren't able to bring the full strength side up, because I would have rather have seen us. I kind of feel that that's always going to be an asterisk against this Australia team that comes up, and that feels, I would much rather that Scotland were testing themselves against full, you know, test squads at full strength. So I can see Scotland by 10, but I think I would much rather that you had Karevi and you had Cooper and you had all these players available to you, because that would have been a hell of a test Not that I don't think we'll have a good one, or that Australia are more than capable of, you know, these young guys seem hungry and the culture's there, then they're more than capable of giving us a shock, because we're more than capable of shooting ourselves in the foot.
Oh, yes. We are world beaters at that.
I think one of the things that will be a big factor is just how good these French-based players are. Because I think, you know, we've seen with our team, we're in pretty desperate need of a bit of more experience at hooker and lock. And so if Tolu Lata's in the form he was for the 2019 World Cup, then that's great. You know, like, he's an instant starter, then he'll probably do all right. If Skelton and Arnold are as good as everyone's saying they're playing in France and they can replicate that at test level, that's great. But for me, and my question for you guys, I guess, is our fullback stock's just completely shot. We have not developed in enough fullbacks. And so obviously they've tried to jettison Kirtley Beale in there. Does it really matter who we pick at fullback? Are you guys feeling pretty confident your aerial game's just going to be quite dominant against us?
Yeah, because I think Doohan came on leaps and bounds for the particularly yeah. Scotland and with the Lions. I think what Doohan has shown, and we've had a lot of debate about kind of, you know, Scottish and how we use residency, but I mean, effectively, the Scotland developed Doohan into the player that he is. When he came over, he was, you know, he had the muscle, but he didn't have all the technical ability. But yeah. You look at him under the high ball for the Lions, he was really strong. I think the difficulty was that we talked about it during the Lions series, there were guys getting in the way and it wasn't, the execution wasn't there, but his ability under high ball's fine. Hogg's ability, they don't tend to drop Darcy Graham back. It tends to be Russell that's back in the backfield and Matt Ferguson. Darcy tends to kind of come up into the line a bit more in defence, because even though he's 5 foot nothing, he can absolutely smash it at a ruck.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you feel, John, but I mean, the high ball's not a particular concern for me for Scotland anymore. It was maybe 2 years ago, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think defensively, so the high ball is always a concern for Scotland defensively, but I think if Scotland can just get parity on that, like not make too many mistakes, not drop too many balls. Thinking about the way Rennie set his Glasgow teams up as well, the kicking game was different. There wasn't as many kicks to compete. It was more kicks for space. So that would play into Scotland's hands as well. Obviously, just kind of removing the lottery that is the high ball sometimes. But yeah, I think offensively, I think Scotland would be confident no matter who you put at fullback, and especially if you put Beale at fullback.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the big things. Your kicking game's gone leaps and bounds. I'm glad that you mentioned it before, John, because I know when Nick White first came back, I think he just saw Conor Murray do a few boxes. He's like, I guess I better do that. But there's no rhyme or reason. It was just, all right, well, let's just chuck it up there and see how it goes.
Conor Murray.
Yeah.
And we look at you look at what Ali Price is, absolutely lethal at box kicks.
Yeah.
You know, he can, you know, drop them on a penny and make them into really contestable. And I think we'll see that. We didn't see a lot against Tonga because I don't think we needed to. But I think the part of that was keeping the powder dry for the Australia games. We wouldn't give too much away. So I think we see a lot of box kicking from Ali Price for Doohan to kind of run onto and chase.
Yeah, certainly if there's nothing on, that will be the go-to, though. Price will put the ball in the air and watch Doohan or someone else. Jamie Ritchie's obviously good at the chase as well, so get Big Ritchie under it. And if you can't get it back, smash the boy in front of you.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think we'll leave it there for this preview. Mitch, thank you very much for joining us.
Cheers,
so late and staying up late. Yeah. Let you get to bed now.
Look, thanks very much for having me. And sorry that the Wallabies team wasn't out to talk about, but the Scottish team's so exciting. I can't wait for this match.
Yeah, no, I think it's absolutely superb. John, thanks again.
You're welcome,
Cam. We'll see you Wednesday. We'll be back Wednesday with a normal full podcast, and then we'll have a South Africa preview later in the week. But for the moment, it's goodbye from me and goodbye from John and Mitch.
I hope you enjoyed hearing some of their thoughts as much as I enjoyed jumping on and listening and talking to them. That'll wrap us up for this week. I will normally try and finish the podcast with a talk of Twitter section, but you know, this week we knew the team was going to come out late because we weren't playing till, you know, Monday morning, realistically, for a lot of people. So, that's why I didn't put out a Twitter post or anything. First time trying the new format. Hopefully it sort of came together all right. I'll try and throw in some transitions or something here or there. But I've really enjoyed doing these podcasts as often as possible.
I'm sorry that they haven't been super frequent or consistent in the last sort of 2 months or so. I will just try and put them out whenever I've got the time. So for those that, you know, have listened along and enjoyed, please let me know. Any review is helpful. Any feedback on Twitter is helpful. Because the end of the day, I'm just keen to talk rugby, and I'm glad there's been so many people out there that have been listening along and talking rugby back. So thank you from me, and enjoy the rugby this weekend.